couldn't see anything.
Yes, Mercy?
Samuel's voice this time, light and playful.
Sweet Mercy. Come out and play, Mercedes Thompson.
He had Samuel's voice down cold, too. Where had he heard Samuel speak? Something scratched down the side of my trailer next to the window, grating with the unmistakable sound of bending metal. I scrambled away and aimed the Marlin, waiting for his shadow to pass in front of the window.
Little wolf, come out, wherever you are.
Warren's voice this time. Then he screamed, a roaring sound of pain beyond bearing. I had no doubt that Warren had made those noises, but I hoped he wasn't making them right outside my trailer. I hoped he was safe at Adam's house. It was a good thing that he'd started with my voice. If I'd believed Warren was screaming outside my trailer, I'd never have been able to stay inside, where it was safe. Maybe. The last of Warren's cries subsided, but Littleton wasn't finished with me yet. He tapped his way along the wall that was the end of the trailer. There was a window in that wall, too, but I didn't see any sign of him, though it sounded as though he was tapping on the glass again. He can't come in, I reminded myself silently, but I still flinched as the metal siding of my home shrieked and the trailer rocked a little. Then there was a brief silence. He resumed his tapping, though it sounded more like banging now. Each time he hit the walls, both my home and I jerked. He continued around to the back, the sounds he made changing as he hit the bathroom wall. One of the tiles fell off the shower stall and shattered. I kept the Marlin aimed toward him, but I kept my finger off the trigger. I couldn't see where I was shooting, and my neighbors' houses were well in range of the Marlin. Even if I managed not to kill any of them, shooting a gun would be bound to draw their attention. My nice neighbors wouldn't stand a chance against a vampire, especially not this vampire. As far as my other, tougher neighbors were concerned, I was a little surprised the noise Littleton was making hadn't attracted them already. Still, Adam's house was well insulated. They might not hear Littleton's voice well enough to worry about it, but a gunshot would bring them running. Werewolves and sorcerers were a bad combination, though, according to Uncle Mike. I believed him, which is why I hadn't tried calling for help. I was beginning to think that Littleton really couldn't come in. He could scare me, but he couldn't come in and hurt me unless I invited him in. "Not by the hair of my chinny-chin-chin," I muttered. He banged the wall again, and I jumped. Seconds passed, a minute, then two, and nothing happened. No screams, no bangs, no ripping siding. How was I going to explain that to my insurance company? "Yes, ma'am," I tried out. "This vampire queen asked me to hunt a vampire and demon combo. He found out somehow, and it ticked him off, so he ripped the siding off my house." I sat down in the middle of my floor with the gun under my arm. "I guess I'll have to fix it myself. I wonder how much siding costs, and whatever else he damaged out there." I couldn't remember if I'd gotten Medea inside before I went to bed. I usually did, but I'd been so tired. As soon as I got my courage up again, I'd go out and make sure Medea was sleeping in Samuel's room, where she preferred to spend the night. I could call Andre, but my shoulders were stiff from the tension, and I leaned my head to the side, stretching. Suddenly, the floor underneath the carpet bent upwards with a tremendous noise. I sprang to my feet and shot my floor while it was still vibrating. I might not be super strong, but I am fast. I shot twice more in rapid succession. Then I waited, staring at the holes in my floor and the powder marks on my cream-colored Berber carpet. Something moved in one of the holes, and I jumped back, shooting again as several small objects were forced through holes that they were too large for. A moment later, I heard a car door slam in my driveway, and a German engine purred to life. A BMW, like Littleton had been driving at the hotel. He drove off. Not in a hurry. Just another driver out on the road. And I stared at the four misshapen, blood-covered silver slugs he'd given back to me. When my alarm went off, I was sitting in the middle of my bedroom floor with Medea curled up purring in my lap for comfort. Why is it that in all the adventure movies, the heroine doesn't have to get up and go to work? It had taken me an hour to send my neighbors back home. I told them the damage must have been done by some irate customer, or maybe one of the local gangs. Yes, I'd fired the shots to scare them off. I didn't think I'd hurt any of them. Maybe they hadn't known anyone was home. Of course I'd called the police, but there was no sense getting them out this late. I'd call them in the morning. Really. I'd been planning on talking to Tony anyway, though I doubted I'd say anything about Littleton's attack. There wasn't anything the police could do about him. I could call in Z just for the day, but I wasn't going to sleep today anyway. I might as well save Z's help for another day. I turned off the alarm and pushed a protesting Medea off my lap and threw on clothes so I could take a look at the damage Littleton had done to my trailer in the morning light. The damage was worse than it had seemed last night. He hadn't torn off the siding. He'd cut it to ribbons from the roof to the bottom in segments a finger length apart. I also had the answer to how he'd gotten underneath it. The cinder block foundation in the back had a person-sized hole broken through it. My trailer was a 1978 14-by-70-foot model long past its prime. It wasn't a showpiece, but it had at least been in one piece when I went to bed last night. Fixing it was going to cost an arm and two legs, if it could be fixed at all. To that end, I'd better get ready to go to work, or there would be no money to fix anything, including breakfast. While I showered, I thought about what I'd learned and what I hadn't. I didn't know where Littleton was now. I didn't know if a gun was useful against a vampire. I had three bullets that said perhaps not, but then they had been covered with blood, so at least they'd done some damage. I didn't know why seeing ghosts made me dangerous to vampires, or how being immune to their magic was going to help me against a vampire who could do what he'd done to my trailer. And after the demonstration Littleton had given me last night, I knew I was going to need Andre to destroy him. I called Adam's house before I left for work to check on Warren. I was also wondering why no one had come over to check out the shooting. The phone rang 10 times before someone picked it up. "Hey, Daryl," I said. "How's Warren doing?"
"He's alive," Adam's second told me. "Unconscious, but alive. We heard the shooting last night, but the wolf we sent over said you had it under control. Is Samuel around?"
"Samuel stayed over there last night," I told him. He made a noncommittal grunt.
"Samuel's not here, and Adam apparently left the house about 2 in the morning. I didn't think to ask the guard about Samuel."
Daryl must be worried if he was telling me all of this. I rubbed my forehead. 2 was a few hours before I'd had my visitor. "Did anyone ask Kyle what they were talking about before they left?"
"Warren's friend was asleep. Warren is drifting in and out, but he is pretty agitated when he is awake. He knows something, but his vocal cords are damaged, and we can't understand a thing he tries to say."
He was answering me as if I had some authority, I realized, as if he really were talking to Adam's mate. "What do you think happened?" I asked.
"I think Adam and Samuel, if he has gone too, figured out where the damned sorcerer is. I don't see Adam leaving Warren alone in this bad a shape otherwise."
Neither did I. I pinched the bridge of my nose. "That could be bad."
"How so?"
"Last night, Uncle Mike told me that having a demon and a werewolf together could be very dangerous. Demons have a deleterious effect on self-control, which is very, very bad for werewolves. Uncle Mike was very concerned." He absorbed that for a moment.
"That could be bad. It might have been nice to know that sooner."
I sucked in a breath. There was more that he should know, but I wasn't happy telling him. Still, with Samuel and Adam both missing, it wasn't smart to withhold information from one of the few allies I had left. This was Daryl, and since he was treating me as though I really was higher in the pack than he was, and since he was unlikely to care much about me one way or the other, he wasn't going to forbid me anything. "I was in Uncle Mike's meeting Marcilia. She wants me to find Littleton and kill the sorcerer for her." There was a very long, telling pause.
"She thinks you can do this?"
His disbelief might not be flattering, but I kind of felt that way myself, so it was all right. "Apparently, she's got one of her higher-ranking vampires helping me out." He said. "I think he's actually okay. He's a friend of Stefan's."
"Adam wouldn't let you do this."
"I know, but he's not there. If Warren regains consciousness, I want you to call me." I gave him my cell number, home number, and the number of the shop. After he'd written it all down, I said, "You need to call Bran and tell him everything."
"Even about you?"
he asked. He He knew what Bran would think about me going after a sorcerer with a vampire.
Yes, I said. I wasn't going to put him in a position that would get Bran angry with him. Bran could get angry with me. I'd had a lot of practice at dealing with that once upon a time. I supposed I could get used to it again. It helped that he was hundreds of miles away, and I had caller ID on my cell phone. Even so... But only if he asks, I added hastily. Daryl laughed.
Yeah, I remember using that trick on my mother. Hope it works better for you than it did for me.
I hung up.
Adam and Samuel had disappeared before Littleton had started his little performance at my trailer. Littleton had Samuel's voice down pat. After 4 hours, Adam hadn't called to check in on Warren, who was not yet out of danger, nor had Samuel. Littleton had them both. If Littleton was like other vampires, he would not be active in the day. There was a chance they were still alive. Littleton liked to savor his prey. I had to find him before nightfall. I called Elizaveta and got her answering machine.
This is Elizaveta Arkadyevna. I am unavailable. Please leave a message with your name and phone number and I will return your call.
This is Mercy, I told it after it beeped at me. Adam and Samuel are missing. Where are you? Call me or Daryl as soon as you can.
I didn't know enough about witchcraft to know if she could help or not. At the very least, I could pick her brain about vampires and sorcerers, if I could convince her that Adam's orders not to talk to me were out of date. I called all three of Tony's numbers and told him to call me on my cell. I called Z, but only got his answering machine. I left a detailed message on his phone also. That way Daryl and Z both knew what I was up to. Then I took my cell phone and headed to work. I'd send Gabriel home for the day and close the shop. My watch said I was 15 minutes early, so I was surprised to see Mrs. Hannah. She was hours ahead of her customary schedule. When I parked in my usual spot, she was next to my car. Frantic as I was, Mrs. Hannah's very presence demanded that I be polite.
"Hello, Mrs. Hannah. You're early today."
There was a pause before she looked up at me, and for a moment she didn't know me at all. A month or two more, I thought, and there would only be a little personality left. But for today, her face eventually lit up.
"Mercedes, child, I was hoping to see you today. I have a special drawing just for you."
She fumbled around in her cart without success, becoming visibly more agitated.
"It's all right, Mrs. Hannah," I told her. "I'm sure you'll find it later. Why don't you leave it for me tomorrow?"
"But it was just right here," she fretted. "A picture of that nice boy who likes you, the dark one."
"Adam." "Tomorrow will be fine, Mrs. Hannah. What brings you out so early?"
She looked around as if bewildered by the question, then relaxed and smiled.
"Oh, that was Joe. He told me I'd better change my route if I wanted to keep visiting him."
I smiled at her. When she'd been alive, she'd talked about John this and Peter that. I never had been sure if she really had boyfriends or just liked to pretend that she had. She leaned forward confidentially.
"We women always have to change for our men, don't we?"
Startled, I stared at her. That was it exactly. I felt as though Adam was changing who I was. She saw that her words had hit home and nodded happily.
"But they're worth it, God love them. They're worth it."
She puttered off in her usual shuffle-shuffle step that covered a surprising amount of ground. Chapter 10.
"No, sir, she's not..." Gabriel looked up as I walked into the shop. "Wait, she's here."
I took the phone, thinking it might be Tony or Elizaveta. "This is Mercy."
"This is John Beckworth. I'm calling from Virginia. I'm sorry, I forgot how much earlier you are than we."
The voice was familiar, but the name was wrong. "Mr. Black?" I asked.
"Yes."
He sounded a little sheepish.
"It's Beckworth, actually. I just got off the phone with a Bran Cornick. He suggested that there is some trouble in the Tri-Cities."
"Yes, we have something of a situation here."
Either Adam had called Bran yesterday, or Daryl had remembered the black Speckworths and talked to him this morning.
So Mr. Cornick said. He suggested that we fly to Montana early next week.
He paused. He seemed less intense than Adam Hauptman. That was Bran, quiet and calm, until he ripped out your throat.
Are you calling to make sure he's safe? I asked.
Yes, he wasn't on the list of men you gave me.
If I had a daughter, I'd have no qualms leaving her with Bran, I said sincerely, ignoring the question of why Bran's name wasn't on the list. He'll take good care of you and your family.
He talked to Kara, my daughter, he said, and there was a world of relief in his voice. I don't know what he said, but I haven't seen her this happy in years.
Good.
Miss Thompson, if there is ever anything I can do for you, please don't hesitate to call.
I started to automatically refuse, but then I stopped.
Are you really a reporter?
He laughed.
Yes, but I don't cover celebrity sex lives. I'm an investigative journalist.
You have ways of finding out about people?
Yes.
He sounded intrigued.
I need as much information as you can get on a man named Corey Littleton. He has a website, fancies himself a magician. It would be particularly helpful if you could find out if he owns property in the Tri-Cities.
That was a long shot, but I knew that Warren had checked out all the hotels and rentals. If Littleton was here, he had some place to stay.
He read the name back to me again.
I'll get what I can. It may take a few days.
Be careful, I said. He's dangerous. You don't want him to know you're looking.
Is this connected to the trouble Mr. Cornick was telling me about?
That's right.
Tell me how to contact you. Probably an email address would be best.
I gave him what he needed and thanked him. Hanging up the phone, I noticed Gabriel's eyes on me.
Trouble? He asked.
Maybe I should have worked harder to keep Gabriel out of my world, but he had a good head on his shoulders, and he wasn't stupid. I decided it was easier to tell him what I could, and safer than if he went looking.
Yes, bad trouble.
That phone call last night?
That's part of it. Warren's hurt badly. Samuel and Adam are missing.
What is it?
I shrugged. That I can't tell you. The vampires didn't like people talking about them.
Is he a werewolf?
No, not a werewolf.
A vampire like Stefan?
I stared at him.
What? I'm not supposed to figure it out?
He shook his head reprovingly.
Your mysterious customer who drives a funky bus painted up like the Mystery Machine and only shows up after dark? Dracula he isn't, but where there's werewolves, there certainly ought to be vampires.
I laughed. I couldn't help it. Fine, yes. Then I told him seriously,
don't let anyone else know you know anything about vampires, especially not Stefan.
Then I remembered that wouldn't be a problem.
I swallowed around the lump in my throat and continued seriously. It's not safe for you or your family. They'll leave you alone as long as they don't know you believe in them.
He pulled his collar aside to show me a cross.
My mother makes me wear this. It was my father's.
That'll help, I told him. But pretending ignorance will help more. I'm expecting a couple of phone calls, one from Tony and the other from Elizaveta Arkadyevna. You'll know her by her Russian accent.
I'd intended to close the shop for the day, but I didn't have anything to do until Tony or Elizaveta called me back. If it had taken 2 weeks for Stefan and Warren to find the sorcerer, I was unlikely to find him by driving up and down streets at random. There are over 200,000 people living in the Tri-Cities. It isn't Seattle, but it's not Two Dot Montana, either. I couldn't concentrate on my work. It took me twice as long to replace a power steering pump as it should have, because I kept stopping to check my phone. Finally, I broke down and called Z again, but there was no answer on his phone. Elizaveta still wasn't answering her phone either, nor was Tony. I started on the next car. I'd only been working on it for a few minutes when Z walked in. From the scowl on his face, he was upset about something. I finished tightening the alternator belt on the 70 Beetle and scrubbed up. When I had most of the grease off my hands, I leaned a hip on a bench and said, "What's up?"
"Only a fool deals with vampires,"
he said, his face closed up into a forbidding visage of disapproval.
"Littleton ripped Warren to bits, Z," I told him. "It probably killed Stefan, and Samuel and Adam are missing."
I did not know about the Alpha and Samuel. His face softened a little. That is bad, Liebchen. But to take direction from the vampire's mistress is not smart.
I'm being careful.
He snorted. Careful? I saw your trailer.
So did I said ruefully. I was there when it happened. Littleton must have found out that Marsilia asked me to find him.
You obviously found him last night. Not that it did you any good.
I shrugged. He was right, but I couldn't just sit around and wait for Daryl to call and tell me they'd found Samuel and Adam dead. Marsilia seems to think I can deal with him.
You believe her?
Uncle Mike did.
That took him aback. He pursed his lips.
What else did Uncle Mike say to you?
The stuff about heroes was too embarrassing, so I told him what Uncle Mike had told me about the effect of demons on werewolves.
Uncle Mike visited me this morning,
Z told me.
Then we both went out and visited some other friends.
He hefted a backpack at me. I caught it and unzipped the bag. Inside was a sharpened stake as long as my forearm, and the knife Z had loaned me the first time I visited the Seethe. It was very good at slicing through things, things a knife had no business cutting at all, like chains, for example.
I got the stake from a fae who has an affinity for trees and growing things, he said. It's made from the wood of a rowan tree, a wood of the light. She said that this would find its way to the heart of a vampire.
I appreciate your trouble, I said, skirting around an outright thank you. He smiled, just a little smile.
You are a lot of trouble, Mercy. Usually, you're worth it. I don't think that knife will do anything to the vampire when his magic is still working. But once he's staked, he will be more vulnerable to it. Then you can use it to cut off his head. Zip!
I reached down to the bottom of the bag where something else was hidden. I brought it out into the light and saw that it was a flat disc of gold. On the front was a lizard, and on the back were marks of some sort that might have been letters. Both the lizard and the lettering were battered.
A vampire is not dead until its body is ashes, Z said. Put this on its body after you've cut off the head, then say the medallion's name.
He took it, brushed his fingers over the lettering, and though I don't think the lettering actually changed, I could read it. Drachen. It had been 10 years ago, but I had taken 2 years of German in college. Kite? I said incredulously. He laughed, the smile flashing wide on his narrow face.
Dragon, Mercy. It also means dragon.
Do I say it in German or English? I asked. He pulled my hand forward and put it in my reluctant palm, closing my hand upon it.
Mach nichts, Liebling.
It doesn't matter. So if someone says either word, it burns whatever it's touching to ashes? I hadn't meant to sound quite so appalled. How often did I really hear the word in everyday life anyway?
Would I give you such a thing?
He shook his head.
No. Uncle Mike has given it your name. No one else may invoke it, and even then it takes both word and desire.
So I have to say it and mean it, I said. I imagined if I was holding it against a vampire, desire to burn the creature to ashes wouldn't be hard to come by.
Right.
I leaned forward and kissed him on the cheek. This will help a lot. He frowned at me for the kiss.
I would like to do more, but it is verboten. Even in so much as we have managed, there is risk.
I understand. Uncle Mike told me.
If it were just risk to me, I would go with you to fight this thing. It is the whole of the Walla Walla Reservation who will suffer.
Because of the violence shortly after the Fae had revealed themselves, most of the Fae, who were not still hidden, had voluntarily relocated to one of several Fae reservations where they could live in safety. Z lived there. I'm not sure about Uncle Mike. But I did know that the Grey Lords weren't above killing one Fae to ensure the good behavior of others. I do understand, I told him. Besides, didn't you tell me once that your talents are not much use against vampires? His eyebrows lowered even further.
My magic would not help, but strength I have. I am a blacksmith. I worry for you, who are so human fragile.
That's why I'm taking one of Marsilia's vampires with me, I told him.
My cell phone rang before he could say what he thought about that. I picked it up and looked at the caller ID, hoping for Tony or Elisabetta. It was Bran. I considered not answering it, but he was all the way in Montana. All he could do was yell at me. "Hey, Bran," I said.
"Don't do it. I will be there tomorrow morning."
Bran said he wasn't psychic, but most of the werewolves were convinced otherwise. Moments like this made me agree with them. I was tempted to feign innocence, but it was too much work. I was tired, and I doubted I was going to be able to sleep until Adam and Samuel were safe at home, or until Littleton was dead.
"Good," I said. "I'm glad you're coming. But both you and Uncle Mike told me demons are very bad news for werewolves. What happens if you lose control?"
It didn't even occur to me that Bran wouldn't know who Uncle Mike was. Bran just knew everything and everyone. He said nothing.
"We don't have enough time to wait for you," I said. "If Samuel and Adam are still alive, I have to find them before nightfall."
He still didn't say anything.
"It doesn't matter if you object," I told him gently. "You can't stop me anyway. With Adam missing, I'm the highest-ranking werewolf in town since he declared me his mate."
Fancy that. And I wasn't even a werewolf. Not that I expected my mythological rank to stand up without Adam around. Still, Bran, of all people, would have to follow his own laws.
"I'm not helpless," I told him. "I have my very own superhero vampire sorcerer slaying kit, and the vampires have given me one of their own to guard my back."
Going after Littleton was probably suicidal, even with a vampire to back me up. It hadn't helped Warren any. But I wasn't going to sit around and wait for Adam's body to show up in Uncle Mike's garbage.
"You trust this vampire?"
"No, but I couldn't tell him that, and I knew better than to try to lie to Bran.
He wants Littleton permanently dead."
I was sure of that much. I'd heard the anger in Andre's voice, the hunger for vengeance. "He was a friend of one of the sorcerer's victims." I could almost say sorcerer's victim fast enough that I didn't think Stefan or Adam or Samuel. A victim was someone nameless and faceless.
"Be careful," he told me finally. "Remember, the walkers may have taught vampires to fear them, but there are still lots of vampires and only one walker."
He hung up.
"He's right," Z told me. "Don't get too cocky."
I laughed. It came out sounding tired and sad. "You saw my trailer, Z. I'm not going to get cocky. None of your people know where he is?" Z shook his head.
"Uncle Mike is looking into it, but he has to be careful. If we find anything, we'll tell you."
The phone rang again, and I answered without looking at the number.
"Mercy."
"You need to get over here."
Kyle spoke very softly, as if he didn't want anyone to overhear him. But he was in a werewolf's house.
"They can hear you," I told him.
I could hear Daryl saying something in Chinese. It was a very bad sign that Daryl was speaking Chinese, because he only did that when he was really ticked off.
"I'll be right over."
I turned toward Z.
"I'll work the shop today, and tomorrow, maybe longer," Z said. "And you won't pay me."
When I started to object, he raised one hand.
"No, I cannot hunt Littleton. But I can help this much."
Fixing the trailer was already turning next month into a macaroni and cheese month. If Z donated his time, at least it wouldn't be a ramen noodle month. I kissed his cheek again and ran for my car. Remembering the fate of the wolf who tailed me yesterday, I drove exactly 5 miles an hour over the speed limit down the highway. Getting a ticket would eat up a lot of time. My cell phone rang again as I drove past the traffic cop who was parked on the other side of the bridge over the train tracks. This time, the phone call was from Tony.
"Hey, Mercy," he said. "I got all 6 messages. What did you need?"
"Is there any way you could get me a list of all the violent incidents the police were called to over the past month? I need it for all the Tri-Cities, not just Kennewick."
"Why?"
The friendliness had left his voice.
"Because there might be something causing them, and it might help stop it if I can find out where the incidences are taking place."
"I watch TV. I've seen the way the police track serial killers, at least in detective shows. It made sense that demon-caused problems might center around the demon. Stefan had apparently run into success using that method. If I ever become a serial murderer, I'll be very careful to kill people in a pattern that centers around a police station and not my home or work.
We have a map, he told me as I turned down Adams Road and put my foot down. Sure, the speed limit on the road was 35, but I'd never seen a police officer out here. Why don't you come over to the station and I'll show it to you, if you answer a few questions.
All right, I said. I have a few errands to run first. Can I meet you in an hour or so?
I'll be here, he said,
and hung up. Honey opened the door of Adam's house before I got to the porch.
They're upstairs, she said unnecessarily.
Daryl was still saying something rude in Chinese. No, I don't speak Chinese, but some things don't require translation. I ran up the stairs with Honey on my heels.
I talked Daryl into coming downstairs after Kyle called you, Honey said. But just a few minutes ago, Warren tried to get out of bed and Kyle yelled at him, so Daryl went back up.
I'd have asked for more details, like why Warren and Daryl were arguing in the first place, assuming it wasn't Kyle and Daryl, but there wasn't time. The guest room door was open. I stopped just outside and took a deep breath. When you walk into a room with two angry werewolves, and I could hear two growls, it is a good idea to be calm. Anger just exacerbates the situation, and fear can make both of them attack you. I shoved the last thought to the back of my mind, tried to think serene thoughts, and walked in. Warren had shifted into his wolf form, and he looked no better than he had last night. Splatters of his blood crusted the sheets, the walls, and the floor. Daryl was still in human form and was struggling with Warren. It looked like he was trying to hold him in the bed.
"Lie down," he roared.
In the pack, Daryl outranked Warren. He was Adam's second, and Warren Adam's third. That meant Warren had to do what Daryl told him to. But Warren, hurt and confused, his human half submerged under the wolf, had forgotten that he was supposed to submit to Daryl's authority. It should have been an instinctive thing. That Warren wasn't listening to Daryl meant one thing. Daryl wasn't really more dominant. Warren had been faking it all along. Under these circumstances, it was a very, very bad thing. A wounded werewolf is dangerous, the wolf nature superseding the human control, and a werewolf is a very nasty creature. Much, much nastier than his natural counterpart. The only reason Warren hadn't killed everyone in the house was because he was half-dead, and Daryl was very, very strong. Kyle was standing against a wall as far as he could get from the bed. His purple silk dress shirt was ripped, and the skin under it torn and dripping blood. The expression on his face was worried, but he didn't smell of fear or anger.
"You're the highest-ranking wolf," Honey whispered. "I told Kyle to call you when Daryl just seemed to irritate Warren. He was all right with Kyle until a few minutes ago."
Hadn't I just told Bran that I outranked Daryl? But Honey, like the rest of Adam's wolves, knew I wasn't really Adam's mate. And even if I was, my authority would be law, not real. Not as real as it would take to help Warren control his wolf. But Honey watched me with faith in her eyes, so I had to try.
"Warren," I said firmly. "Lie down."
If I was the most surprised person in the room when Warren subsided immediately, Daryl was a close second. I've always thought that it was stupid, the way female pack members take their rank from their mate. I thought it was one of those dumb things that the wolves' human halves tacked on to nature to make life difficult, something the human part of the werewolves paid attention to, not the wolf. Daryl slowly let go of Warren and sat on the end of the bed. Warren lay limply where he'd been, his splendid brown coat ragged and coated with blood, some old, some fresh. "Well," I said to cover up my confusion, "it's a good sign that he can shift, and he'll heal faster in this form." I looked at Kyle. "Did he say anything about why Samuel and Adam left?"
"No."
Kyle frowned at me.
"What did you do?"
I shrugged. "Werewolf politics," I told him.
"How did you do this when I could not?" Daryl asked.
I looked over and saw that his dark eyes had lightened to yellow, and he was staring at me. "Not my fault," I told him. "Adam didn't even ask me before he claimed me as mate before the pack. I certainly didn't think it was anything more than a way to keep me from getting eaten. As far as dominance goes, you and Warren will have to sort things out when Adam gets back." I looked back at Kyle and asked him again, "How badly are you hurt?" Kyle shook his head.
Just a scratch. He raised his face to me. Am I going to howl at the moon, too?
I shook my head. It's not that easy to become a werewolf. He'd have had to nearly kill you. A scratch wouldn't do it.
Kyle was a lawyer. Nothing showed on his face. I couldn't tell if he was relieved or disappointed. Maybe he didn't know either.
We're going to have to move him down to the safe room, I told Daryl.
The safe room was a room in the basement that was reinforced to withstand a full-grown werewolf. If Daryl wasn't dominant enough to make sure Warren stayed quiet, the cell was the only alternative.
We can leave him on the mattress, suggested Honey. Daryl and I can carry him down the stairs.
Which is what we did. Kyle and I followed, and I explained what we were doing as quickly as I could.
Warren didn't object to being imprisoned, but we had trouble keeping Kyle from following him.
He didn't hurt me on purpose, he said, standing just inside the cell door. I was trying to help Daryl keep him down.
It'll get worse before it gets better, I told him.
He didn't hurt me before.
Which let everyone in the room except Kyle know just how much Warren cared about him. Even a crazed werewolf won't harm his mate.
I don't want to have to explain to Warren why we let him eat you, I said. Look, you can sit in this couch right here and stay all day.
There was a little sitting room outside the cell, with a couch, matching easy chair, and big screen TV.
It'll only be for the day, Daryl said, his voice still a little growly,
making me glad we weren't closer to a full moon.
He'll be well enough to be on his own tonight.
Warren and his wolf might have accepted me as Adam's mate, but I doubted Daryl did, and finding out that Warren was dominant to him was going to make him touchy for a while. A long while. We left Warren in the cell, with Kyle leaning against the silver-coated bars. It wasn't the smartest place for him to wait, but at least he wasn't inside.
I have to go, I told Daryl once we were upstairs. I'm still trying to locate Adam and Samuel. Can you handle it from here?
He didn't answer me. Just stared down toward the cell.
We'll be all right, said Honey softly.
She stroked Daryl's arm to comfort him.
They won't accept him as second, Daryl said.
He was probably right. That Warren had survived being a homosexual werewolf as long as he had was a tribute to his strength and intelligence.
You can sort it out with Adam when he gets back, I said.
I glanced at my watch. I had just enough time to call Elisabetta before I left for the police station. I didn't leave a third message on her answering machine.
It might have annoyed her.
When I got off the phone, Daryl said,
Elisabetta left town after Adam found Warren. She said it was too dangerous for her to be here. If the demon got too close to her, it might be able to jump from Littleton to her, which, she told us, would be a disaster. She gathered her family and took a trip to California.
I knew that Elisabetta wasn't a Wiccan witch. Her powers were inherited and had nothing to do with religion. That she was so afraid of a demon told me that she had already had some dealings with the powers of darkness. Otherwise, the demon wouldn't have been able to take her over without an invitation.
Damn it, I said. I don't suppose you have any ideas on how to kill Littleton.
He smiled at me, his teeth very white in the darkness of his face.
Eat him, he said.
Very funny. I turned to leave.
Kill the vampire, and the demon goes away, he told me. That's what the witch told Adam. And you kill a vampire by staking him, cutting off his head, and then burning him.
Thank you, I told him, though it was nothing I didn't know. I'd been hoping Elisabetta would have some knowledge of the demon that would make it easier to kill Littleton. After I shut the door behind me, I heard Daryl say,
Of course, eating him would work too.
The Kennewick police station was not too far from my shop, right next to Kennewick High. There were a bunch of high schoolers crowded into the small entryway, mobbing the pop machine. I waded through them to the glass-fronted booth where a young man, who looked like he'd have been more at home with the kids on the other side, sat doing paperwork. He took my name and Tony's, then buzzed me through the first door into an empty waiting room. I'd never been inside a police station before, and I was more intimidated than I'd expected. Nervousness always made me claustrophobic, so I paced back and forth in the air-conditioned room. It smelled strongly of whatever cleaner they'd used, though I expect that wouldn't have bothered anyone with a less sensitive nose. Beneath the antiseptic smell, it smelled of anxiety, fear, and anger. I must have looked a little wild-eyed by the time Tony came to get me, because he took one look and asked,
"Mercy, what's wrong?"
I started to say something, but he held up one hand.
"Wait, this isn't private. Come with me."
Which was just as well, because I wasn't sure what I was going to tell him. As I followed him down the corridor, I decided that the problem with deciding to bend the rules was trying to figure out just how far I could bend them. The Fae weren't going to step in against Littleton, at least not yet. The werewolves, according to Uncle Mike and Bran, didn't stand a chance. If the vampires were asking my help, it was a good sign they didn't know what to do about him either. Bran had said that eventually sorcerers fall victim to their demon and all hell breaks loose. It just might be that the KPD would be the people on the front lines when that happened. On the other hand, if it ever got back to the Seed that I told the police about their existence, I might as well kill myself right now. Tony led me to a smallish office room and shut the door behind us, closing out the sounds of the department. It wasn't his office. Even if it hadn't smelled like someone else, I could have told from the wedding picture on the desk. It was about 30 years old, and both of the smiling young people in it were blonde. Tony sat on the edge of the desk, set a manila file folder he'd been carrying beside him, and waved me vaguely to one of the chairs against the wall.
"You look like something the cat dragged in," he said.
I shrugged. "Rough morning." He sighed and tapped his finger on the folder.
"Would it help if I told you I have here a report from a concerned citizen who called at 7:23 this morning? It seems that her nice young neighbor, one Mercedes Thompson, had to fire her rifle in order to drive off a bunch of hooligans last night or early this morning. One of our patrolmen stopped by to see the damage."
He gave me a somber look.
"He took pictures."
I gave him a wry smile. "I was surprised at how bad it was when I saw it this morning, too."
"Is this because someone saw you talking to me yesterday?"
It would have solved a lot of problems if I let him think that, but I prefer not to lie. Especially when that lie might start a fae hunt. "No, I told my neighbors it was probably just kids or someone angry with my work."
"So they came after your trailer with can openers? How long were they there before you came after them with a rifle?"
"Am I under arrest?" I asked brightly. Shooting a rifle where I lived might be illegal. I'd never checked it out.
"Not at this time," he said carefully.
"Ah." I settled back in the uncomfortable chair. "Blackmail. How fun." I tried to see the best way through this. Honesty was always the best policy. "Okay," I said finally, having decided how much I could tell him. "You are right. There is something that's causing people to become violent. If I tell you what it is, however, I won't live to see tomorrow. Also, even if you know what it is, you won't be able to do anything to stop it. It is not a werewolf and not a fae. Nor is it human, though it might appear that way."
He looked surprised. "We were right?"
I nodded my head. "Now, let me tell you this. It came last night and ripped my trailer to pieces, but it couldn't come in because I didn't invite it. You have to invite evil into your home. That's one of the rules. I shot it 4 times with my Marlin 444 loaded with silver. I hit it at least 3 times without even slowing it down. You need to stay away from it. Right now, it's in hiding. The rise in violence is just a side effect. If you bring it out into the open, there will be a lot more bodies. We're trying to contain it without getting anyone killed. Hopefully, very soon."
"Who is we?" he asked.
"Some acquaintances of mine." I looked him square in the eye and prayed that he'd leave it there. The heavy emphasis I used was straight out of a gangster movie. He didn't have to know how underpowered we were. The police would be even more helpless than Andre and I. "I promise I won't lie to you about the preternatural community," I told him. "I may leave things out because I have to, but I won't lie to you."
He didn't like it. Didn't like it at all.
He tapped his fingers unhappily on the top of the desk, but in the end, he didn't ask more questions. He got off the desk and walked over to a cabinet mounted in the wall behind my chair. I moved when he opened it and pushed back the doors to reveal a whiteboard in the center and corkboards on the inside of each door. On one of the corkboards, someone had pinned up a map of the Tri-Cities and covered it with round-headed colored pins. Most of the pins were green, some were blue, and a double handful were red.
"This isn't all of them," he said.
A couple of weeks ago, a few of us wondered if there was a pattern to the violence, so we pulled all reports of violence since April. The green pins are usual stuff. Property damage, arguments that get a little hot and someone calls him in, someone bangs his girlfriend around, that kind of stuff. Blue is where someone ended up in the hospital. Red is where someone ended up dead. A few of them are suicides. He put a finger on a cluster of red near the highway in Pasco. This is the murder-suicide at the motel in Pasco last month. He moved his hand to a green pin all by itself near the east edge of the map. This is your trailer. I looked at the map. I'd expected to get a list of addresses, but this was exactly what I needed, and not, because there was no pattern I could see. The pins were scattered evenly around the Tri-Cities, denser where the population was heavier, light in Finley, Burbank, and West Richland, where there weren't so many people. There was no neat ring of pins like you see in the movies. "We can't find a pattern either," he said. "Not an overall pattern. But the incidences do tend to come in clusters. Yesterday it was East Kennewick. Two fistfights and a family disturbance that roused the neighborhood. The night before, it was West Pasco."
"He's moving around," I said. That wasn't good. Where was he keeping Adam and Samuel if he was moving around? "Is there a time of day that the violence is the worst?" I asked.
"After nightfall."
I looked at the pins again, silently counting the red ones. They were short of Uncle Mike's count, and I don't think either of them knew about the family who died during Daniel's experience with Littleton.
"Did you learn anything?" he asked.
"Hunting serial killers is easier on TV," I said sourly.
"Is that what we're dealing with?"
I shrugged, then remembered Littleton's face when he killed the woman at the motel. "I think so, of a sort. The incidental violence is really bad, Tony, but this monster likes to kill. If he decides he doesn't need to hide anymore, it would be very bad. What can you tell me about serial killers?"
"I haven't seen one here," he said. "Doesn't mean we don't have one we don't know about. But there are things we watch for."
"Like what?"
"Most of them start with easy victims for practice."
"Easy like Daniel?" I thought.
"I have a friend in the Seattle PD who tells me his whole department is waiting for someone to get killed. For 3 years they've had neighborhood pets turn up dead. They're patrolling extra heavily near their at-risk populations, the homeless, runaways, and prostitutes."
I shivered. Had Littleton been a killer before he became a sorcerer and a vampire? Had he been a vampire first, or a sorcerer? Had he been evil, or had he been made evil? Not that it mattered. Someone knocked on the door. Tony reached past me to open it.
"Come on in, Sergeant," he said. "We're finished here. Sergeant, this is Mercedes Thompson. Mercy, this is Sergeant Owens, our watch commander. This is his office."
Sergeant Owens was lean and fit, an older, more cynical version of the smiling young man in the wedding photo. He held out his hand, and I shook it. He kept mine a moment, examining the traces of grease I could never quite get out from under my nails.
"Mercedes Thompson," he said. "I hear that you had trouble last night. I hope there is no recurrence."
I nodded. "I expect they got it out of their systems," I told him with a faint smile. He didn't smile back.
"Tony tells me that you have ties to the werewolf and fae communities, and you've agreed to help us out."
"If I can," I agreed. "Though I'm probably more qualified to tune up your cars than to give you advice."
"You'd better be a very good mechanic," he said. "My people put their lives on the lines. I don't need bad advice."
"She fixed Sylvia's car," Tony said.
In addition to being Gabriel's mother, Sylvia was a police dispatcher.
"She's a very good mechanic. Her advice will stand up."
In point of fact, Z had fixed Sylvia's car, but that was beside the point. The sergeant relaxed.
"All right, all right. We'll see how it goes."
We were back in the hall when I stopped.
"What?"
Tony asked. "Take off the pins for the incidents at night. We need the daytime violence," I told him. His very presence would cause violence. "This thing moves around at night, but I don't think he can move during the day."
"All right," he said. "It'll take a while. I'll get a rookie on it. Do you want to wait?"
I shook my head. "I can't afford to. Would you call me?"
"Yes."
I thought he'd drop me back at the waiting room, but he escorted me all the way out. This time the little entryway was empty of students. "Thank you," I said as I got in my car.
He held my door open and saw what Stefan had done to my dash.
"Somebody hit that," he said.
"Yep, I have that effect on people."
"Mercy," he said somberly. "Make sure he doesn't hit you like that."
I touched the broken vinyl where Stefan had put his fist. "He won't," I told him.
"You sure I can't help you?"
I nodded. "I promise that if that changes, I'll call you right away." I stopped at a fast food restaurant and ordered lunch. I ate a couple of cheeseburgers and a double order of fries, though I wasn't particularly hungry. I hadn't had any sleep, so staying alert meant fueling up. The large caffeinated soda would help, too. When I was through eating, I got in my car and drove around, thinking myself in circles. I just didn't have enough information to find the sorcerer, and I needed to find him before dark. Before he killed Samuel and Adam. I refused to believe they might already be dead. He hadn't had time to play with them yet. Why had Marsilia sent me after Littleton, knowing I was too stupid to find him? I jerked my car over to the side of the road and parked it abruptly, too busy thinking to be safe driving. Never trust a vampire. It was the first thing I'd ever learned about vampires. Despite her performance at Stefan's trial, Marsilia claimed she had believed Stefan when he told her there was a vampire who was a sorcerer loose in the Tri-Cities. She could have sent the whole Seethe after him. Instead, she'd sent Stefan and Daniel. No, Stefan had chosen Daniel. She'd expected Stefan to pick Andre, as had Andre, for that matter. Even after she believed Stefan dead, she still didn't send the Seethe after Littleton. Instead, she sent me with Andre. Me. I was supposed to find Littleton, or so she said. Andre was to keep me alive while I did so, or follow me around so Marsilia knew what I was doing. Andre thought that Marsilia meant to see if she could take control of Littleton rather than kill him. Was that what Marsilia wanted him to do? Was that what he'd been supposed to do if he'd gone hunting with Stefan? If Marsilia told him not to kill Littleton, he wouldn't. She was his maker, and he couldn't disobey her, though apparently Stefan could. I rubbed my face and tried to clear my thoughts. Knowing what Marsilia was up to might be important in the long run, but it wasn't going to help me find Littleton. Littleton wasn't leaving any traces for me to follow. "So what do you do when you're out hunting, and you can't find any tracks or scent?" I asked aloud. It was a basic question, one that Samuel used on new werewolves who were ready to go for their first hunt. "You go to places that will attract your prey," I answered. "Come on, Samuel, that's not going to help. I don't know what attracted the sorcerer here in the first place." "To know how to find them, you have to understand your prey." Some little thought nudged at me. Littleton was not from the Tri-Cities. He'd been traveling through when he ran into Daniel. He'd come back, and Stefan and I had found him. He'd been waiting for Stefan. Why? Then it hit me. I'd read the Faust story in several versions, from Benet's The Devil and Daniel Webster to Marlowe and Goethe. Sorcerers sell themselves to demons for knowledge and power. There was nothing in Littleton's actions that I could see as a search for knowledge or power. Demons crave chaos, violence, and death. Littleton brought that in abundance, but if the demon were directing his actions wholly, there would be more bodies. Demons are not patient creatures. The demon would not have let Warren go, would not have let Stefan and me go that first night. But Littleton was a new vampire, and new vampires do what their makers tell them to do. So what would a vampire get from Littleton's actions? Littleton had almost certainly killed Stefan and Ben and nearly killed Warren, but I was pretty sure that the wolves were collateral damage. No one would have predicted that the werewolves would get involved at all. So what could Daniel's disgrace and Stefan's death gain a vampire? Stefan had been Marsilia's favorite. Was the sorcerer an indirect attack on Marsilia? I drummed on the steering wheel. If the Seethe had been a wolf pack, I'd have been able to interpret her actions better. Still, she sent Stefan out and pretended it was punishment. Pretended for whose benefit? If all of the Seethe were her get, obedient to her will, as Andre told me vampires had to be, she wouldn't have had to pretend at all.
So maybe she was having trouble controlling her people. Maybe someone sent Littleton here to destroy her, to take over the Seethe. How did a vampire become the leader of a Seethe? Could Littleton's maker be in the Tri-Cities? If he was, could he hide from the other vampires? I needed more information. More information about Marsilia and her Seethe. More information about how vampires worked. And I knew only one place. I might get it. I started the car again and headed for Stefan's menagerie. Chapter 11. There was a gleaming red Harley-Davidson motorcycle in the driveway that hadn't been there last night. I pulled in behind it and stopped my car. The poor old rabbit looked out of place in such an upscale neighborhood. I rang the doorbell and waited a long time. My mother had taught me to be polite, and part of me felt guilty for disturbing them during a time when they were probably used to sleeping. Guilt didn't keep me from ringing the doorbell again. It was Rachel who opened the door, and like me, she looked like she'd had a hard night. She wore a thin, bright yellow T-shirt that left a 4-inch gap between its hem and the top of her low-rise jeans. Her navel was pierced, and the sapphire-colored stone in the ring twinkled when she moved. It drew my eye, and I had to force myself to look at her face, which was sporting several blue bruises along her jaw that hadn't been there last night. Her upper arm bore a purple handprint where someone had grabbed her. She didn't say anything, just let me look my fill as she did the same to me. Doubtless she saw the puffy skin and dark circles that showed my lack of sleep. "I need more information," I told her. She nodded and backed away from the door so I could come inside. As soon as I was in the house, I could hear someone crying. A man. He sounded young and hopeless. "What happened here?" I asked, following her into the kitchen, the source of the sobs. Naomi was sitting at the butcher block counter, looking 10 years older than she had last night. She was wearing the same conservative clothes, and they looked the worse for wear. She looked up briefly as we walked in, but then turned her attention back to the mug of coffee she was sipping with deliberate calm. Neither she nor Rachel paid any attention to the young man curled up in the corner of the room next to the sink. I couldn't see his face because he had his back to all of us. He was rocking, the rhythm of the motion interrupted by the infrequent sobs that made his shoulders jerk forward. He was muttering something just under his breath, and even my ears couldn't catch exactly what he said. "Coffee?" asked Rachel, ignoring my question. "No." The food I'd eaten was sitting like a lump in my stomach as it was. If I added coffee to it, I wasn't sure it would stay down. She got down a mug for herself and poured some coffee out of an industrial-sized coffee maker on the counter. It smelled good. French vanilla, I thought. The scent was soothing, better than the taste would have been. I pulled up a chair next to Naomi, the same one I'd used last night, and, glancing again at the man curled up in the corner, I asked again, "What happened to you?" Naomi looked at me and sneered. "Vampires, what happened to you?" "Vampires," I replied. Naomi's sneer sat oddly on her face and seemed out of character, but I didn't know her enough to be sure. Rachel tugged a chair around so she was opposite Naomi and me.
"Don't take it out on her. She's Stefan's friend, remember, not one of them."
Naomi looked back at her cup, and I realized that she wasn't calm at all. She was in that place beyond fear where nothing you do matters because the worst has already happened and there's nothing you can do about it. I recognized that look. It's an expression I see a lot around the werewolves. It was Rachel who told me what had happened.
"When Stefan didn't come back yesterday morning, Joey, that's short for Josephine, decided to leave while she could."
Rachel didn't drink her coffee, just turned her cup this way and that.
"After you left, though, I heard her motorcycle in the driveway. Can't mistake the sound of Joey's hog."
She moved her hands away from the mug and wiped them on her thighs.
"I was stupid. I know better, especially after Daniel. But it was Joey."
"Joey has been here the longest," Naomi said, when it became obvious Rachel was finished speaking. "She was bound to Stefan already." She saw my puzzlement because she explained, "That means she's almost one of them already. Everything except the actual changeover. The longer they stay bound before they die, the better the chance they'll rise again. Stefan is patient. His people almost always rise, because he waits for years longer than most vampires. She was telling me all this so she wouldn't have to go on with the story. Daniel?